Walk On Army, it's 2:35. You're about to listen to our episode with David Eicholt. Very excited for you guys to hear this. Before we get into it, I want to let you guys know you're listening to this on Monday, or maybe you're a day late on Tuesday, or maybe you're listening to this far after it came out, in which case this doesn't matter so much. But if you're listening to it on Monday or Tuesday when it comes out, you have just under 2 days to get your merch order in for our current run. The tight end U shirts, the new Hawks by a Million stuff. Our run is going to close down on July 28th. You're listening to this on either the 25th or the 26th or the 27th. One of those dates, so you don't have much time. We're rocking that brand new tight end U design. As always, 50% of our proceeds are going to benefit the Children's Hospital. Get your gear so that you can look flying kinetic this fall. Go to our Twitter page or our Instagram page to find that link, or you can find that link through our store tab on hawksbyamillion.com or thewashedupwalkons.com. Now let's get into the episode. Episode 235, we bring David Eicholt on. I, Kluver, went on his podcast, The Swarmcast. Now he returns the favor and comes onto the Washed Up Walk-Ons. We talk all about him being part of the media, him being from Nebraska, him getting a job, him raising the fucking standard of Iowa Iowa beat writing. That's a joke. All right, let's just have a day. Let's go. Welcome back, Wash Up Walk-Ons fans, into episode 235 of the podcast. The last episode you listened to was Nick DeMarco, and it most likely went clear over your head. Hopefully this one hits a little bit closer to home. Today joining us is guest David Eicholt. You probably know who that is if you're a fan of our podcast, a fan of Iowa sports. He covers Iowa football, Iowa basketball, covers recruiting for 247 Sports and hosts his own podcast called The Swarmcast, which is a fantastic name. And he's a Pop Smoke fanatic. David, welcome into the show.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me on. It's an honor, I believe. How many media members have been on? If any.
I think you're the first one.
No,
we talked to Morehouse on.
Oh, we did have Morehouse on. Yep, we did have Morehouse on.
Morehouse, okay.
Yeah, the OG. So we had old head, and now we got young head. And I want to kind of talk about that dynamic because you're not the only young person in Iowa media. We'll get there in a second. But as I mentioned in the intro there, Pop Smoke is like all you tweet. It's like 50% of your tweets. I got to figure out what's going on there.
No, the best part about that entire, like, I'll call it a shtick. Like, yeah, I listened to a lot of him, but like, it honestly started as a joke, and it stems back to Iowa basketball season when obviously there weren't fans allowed to be in there. And I couldn't believe they played that as intro music. And I tweeted out like as a joke for like the first game, like, oh my God, they're playing it or whatever. And I don't think I ever tweeted about Smoke before. The tweet got like 120 likes. I mean, like retweets. I'm like, this is the stupidest thing ever. Like, I can write a great article, get no traction on Twitter with it, but I tweet about Pop Smoke and this happened. And like, I missed two games and everybody's like, okay, why didn't you tweet about it? Did they do it? And I'm like, all right, now this is a thing. So I'm just going to rock with it.
It just turned into a thing. The one thing I left out of, I, for one, don't listen to music. So I've never heard a Pop Smoke song. Drake's probably listened to some of it. He probably knows more about it than I
know who the Woo is, man.
Yeah. And I looked it up in research for this podcast, and evidently my guy got ran up on at 4:30 in the morning and murdered. Yeah. What's going on?
It was a 15-year-old that did it too. It was a 15-year-old who like saw his watch. And he wanted it, and he knew where the guy lives. So they ran up on him at like 4:30 in the morning and just flat out killed him, like a 15, 16-year-old.
Absolutely absurd.
Oh, they got the watch, and then I think they resold it for like $2,000, which like 1/100th or one, you know, like 1% of what it was actually worth.
That's really tough. Another thing that's tough that I did not mention in the intro is David Eicholt is a Nebraska Husker.
Loser. I was wondering when this is going to come up. I had the over-under set at about 5 minutes. So.
Early. So, you know, if you've probably listened to a few of our episodes, it's, you know, I wouldn't call it a shtick, but we run it up as much of a shtick as we need it to be. Drake has had an entire episode one time. I think episode number 3 is him shitting all over Nebraska and Iowa State combo episode. Go back to that one. One of our only good early episodes. And now you report for the Hawkeyes. I wonder where are you from and how does one make the decision to go to the University of Nebraska Lincoln?
So yeah, let me start there. So I'm from Sioux City. I was born in Sioux City. Okay. Like my family's from small town Iowa. I don't know if you guys know where Marcus, Iowa is.
Nope.
That's where my mom's from, like 1,200 people town. Mine's from Sioux City. When I was super young, we moved to Nebraska, and then I moved to Utah for 10 years, and then I moved back to Nebraska for my senior year of high school. Just because family, like health issues, stuff like that. So we had some stuff to take care of, and I wasn't about to go to college in Utah. I had no interest in it. Just wasn't for me.
I was going to say, did they fully convert you?
Or? Yeah. See that. I was going to say that. I was waiting for that question to come up too. I'm not. So that was a,
they didn't get you into their cult while you were there.
Nah, it's crazy though, too. Cause like, that's the culture out there. Like it's an entire culture, like in that state it's just a different,
They sell way. Beer alcohol there. Their beer is like 2% or something like that.
So I know that the new law they passed, cause I went back out there to go visit some family a few months ago. And some friends too. And like, you can't go in a restaurant and order more than one drink without ordering like an entree or some sort of food. It's against state law.
Double, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. They won't give you a double
that's
drink.
That's like a state rule.
Yeah. It's a state law.
And they'll only serve you one drink per hour. If I remember correctly.
Yep. It's something like that. Yep. Like I lived in St. George, Utah, which is like 2 hours from Vegas, 40 minutes from Mesquite, 40 minutes from Maine. And like, I think there's only one or two bars and one, and there's like 200,000 people there.
Jesus Christ.
So a little bit of a culture shock coming to Iowa, Nebraska for that.
So you moved back at, like what, like when you were in middle school?
No, so I moved back to Nebraska my senior year of high school.
Oh, okay. So you, okay.
So I moved out of Nebraska in like going into third grade. Okay. And then I moved back my senior year.
So,
and in-state tuition is a powerful tool, man.
I was just going to say proximity was the main factor here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, so I grew up following Iowa sports. I don't think people really realize that. It's like, I've been following, my parents are both, you know, big Iowa fans. I grew up following them. So it was a pretty easy transition, like once I got the job. But the best part about getting the job though, was like all the Nebraska, cause I interned for Rivals in Nebraska for 2 years, right? The Yahoo company covers them. All the Nebraska people hated me because I was going to Iowa. All the Iowa people are like, okay, why the hell is this Nebraska grad coming to Iowa to cover the school? So it was just like, everybody hated me when I first got here. And it's like, all right, sick. Well, trying to make this work.
That's tough. That's definitely tough. I think that when I came onto your podcast, we had mentioned briefly beforehand how, and it must have been during your time with them, how you got to cover some of those coaches at Nebraska. And I'm curious how covering those coaches and that athletic department has differed from covering the Hawkeyes in your first few years here.
Yeah. So, you know, it about Nebraska where like, I think I give them a lot of credit from a media perspective. Like we got to the assistant coaches once a week. We got to talk to players like 3 different days a week. Obviously, players wouldn't be available every day. It'd be like different players. You got the head coach twice. I mean, just the amount of media availability was ridiculous. Might be even a little much because it's so hard to really cover everything. And, you know, Iowa, it's like you get the players one day, then you get the coach, then you get Kirk 2 hours later, and you get the position coaches like three or four times a year. You get them in spring, you get them in fall. And I think you get, at least obviously get Brian and Phil like during the season. So, I mean, that was a little bit of a tougher transition just as like, okay, well, the amount of transparency of access that Nebraska gave us is that's not like the normal thing. So, I mean, that's been different, but, I mean, I think Iowa's done it. I thought Iowa did a great job adjusting with the pandemic. I mean, it was honestly kind of a bitch to cover sports when you have to do everything over Zoom because of how just different it is. But
Drake's a big fan.
You know,
on this podcast,
I was gonna assume, man, like covering Nebraska, like during the stretch where I did, I mean, it honestly prepared me for about almost anything that hit Iowa. Like that was when I-Course dropped the. We had to evaluate where Iowa was as a program. That's when they brought in Frost. That's when they fired Mike Riley. That's where the old wide receivers coach got like his third DUI and they suspended him for two games. I mean, it was like some crazy, crazy stuff that was going on. So like coming to Iowa and having some sense of normalcy was like, at least for the first little while, it was like, all right, I'm pretty much geared up to do whatever it is. But yeah.
They're a pretty choppy program. I know you saw the tweet that they put out with the wave, the missed tackle. Drake probably didn't see it. Kevin, did you see it?
I saw it. Absolutely hilarious response from Twitter world.
I don't know who runs Iowa football social media, but tick mark in the win box for them on that one.
Somebody explain it to me. If we were shitting on Nebraska on Twitter, I need to hear about it.
Yeah, let me actually just probably pull it up.
Didn't Nebraska tweet out for like it was a Shark Week type promo, like ride the wave, and then they put like JoJo Doman supposedly laying a hit on Laporta, but he missed the tackle. Like Laporta just shoved him off.
Yeah, so this is the tweet.
Like they found the play.
So this is the tweet, Drake, if you want to – I think you can see that, right?
I can see it.
So for the YouTube viewers, so this is a play from Iowa's game with Nebraska last year, I believe.
Okay.
And this was like a screen pass or so to Laporta, and he spun out of this tackle. Now, clearly, because this fucking guy's got his eyes in the dirt, but it looks like in the cool edit that he maybe laid him out, which he definitely didn't. The tweet was... so yeah, it's like this Shark Week kind of post, and it says nothing to see here, just a friendly interaction, because I think there was some joke about them changing the name of like Shark Attacks.
It was like Shark Advocates. Yeah.
Shark Advocates want them to change it to like a friendly interaction. So then Iowa football quote tweeted that and said, really interesting picture of choice, because you guys haven't had a friendly interaction with us in 5 years. And
six years,
right? So that's pretty good.
That's the most polite way to tell somebody to eat dicks that I've ever heard.
I responded to that quote tweet from the Iowa football account and just said buried, and it got 200 favorites. Like, it's wild how much people love to hate from fan base to fan base. I really think the hate in the fan base of that rivalry game is what carries the rivalry. Like, dude, it's not,
there's less IQ points in the entire state of Nebraska than there are followers on your account, Kluver, and you're not that popular.
I mean, I got 10K, but,
saying something about the IQ points in Nebraska.
Yeah. There's not very many.
There's probably about the same amount of teeth.
There's not a lot of
silly rednecks out there, dumb fucking their sisters, goddamn.
Okay, well, there is that. I am interested from a guy who knows a little bit, comes from the Nebraska scene, and now kind of reports, writes about this subject. What are your thoughts on Frost and how hot his seat is, David?
I don't think it can afford to be hot. Because if they fire him, I've said this since they hired him. Frost was the perfect candidate for that program if they ever want to get back to even relatively where they are. Because in all reality, if anyone expects Nebraska to get back to what Nebraska was in the 90s playing in the Big Ten Conference, they're just delusional. There's zero chance it's ever going to happen with Michigan, Penn State, Ohio State in there. There's zero chance of that ever happening. If we're in Wisconsin, I mean, Wisconsin had to – great in a football. Obviously last year they took a step back. Iowa's been reliable from there too. I mean, right now this is a team that's struggling to beat Illinois. And I think that Champaign, when they go Champaign to play in the opening game, I think it could go either way, because I think Bielema is going to at least have some sort of traction there, and they return a lot of pieces. So I think that if they make a bowl game this year, he's safe. But man,
the thing is, though,
if they fire Frost, who's going to want to go coach there with the track record of firing coaches?
They might be able to.
Nobody's
going to
want to go there.
Drake could go coach there.
Dude, I could be an inspirational piece. They'd at least play a little harder as fucking pussies.
You might. I think Drake Kulik with zero coaching experience could get Nebraska to 7 wins. I think.
Dude, I'll tell you what. With the recruits that they think they have, I would be at least a 10-win coach, because they think they've still got blue chippers out there. So,
I will say this, though, too. Like, Nebraska right now, I think it's such a big year for them. This is all Frost players. Like, they've said, okay, for Frost system and Frost players really come through. This is it. Like, I'm not saying end all be all for Nebraska, but, like, I don't know where they go from here if they fire Frost, because I don't think it's out of a job at this point, the track record. And again, I think with even throw Northwestern in this category, like Northwestern better, and Northwestern under, I think Pat Fitzgerald's probably one of the better coaches in the country. Gets out of those guys.
That's it. You got to call him by his real name.
Yeah. So David, around here, we call him it's Pat Fitzgerald, but it's Fat Fitzgerald. So there's no respect around here. We don't slam, you know.
Hey, you guys up. I just report. I'm like, you guys.
Kevin, have you ever gotten the chance to meet David, or do you know of David at all?
I know who David is, and I've never gotten the chance, and I'm sorry I'm on the phone right now. But David, nice to meet you, man. Like you,
yeah,
so
nice
far.
To meet you.
Yeah, that's Kevin Ward. He's what keeps this show together, really. He's the glue. He's a glue guy. So you work for 247 Sports, and I've seen multiple times – I think maybe on the day of like the anniversary, you got the job or whatever. You've been there for what, 3 years now?
Yeah, I'm going in my fourth football.
Okay. So I've seen that your big thing was like keep for new college graduates to keep applying, keep trying, doing new things, because you applied for something like 386,000 jobs and got denied until you finally found someone to hire you. And I'm wondering what that process was like, and some thoughts maybe from that time in your life and what you learned from that.
I mean, like, you know, coming out of college, I mean, I don't want to say I was thinking I was hot shit, but like, I had a good resume. Like, I worked for respectable outlets. I'd put together really good stuff, and I'm like, all right, like, it's not gonna be that difficult finding a job, you know, whatever, right? I applied for 127 jobs. I didn't even get interviewed, and I got denied. I think I got 36 denials, and the other whatever jobs, they didn't even send me anything back. The only thing I got was like, thanks for applying, whatever. I didn't even get denied. I never got a follow up.
And were these jobs similar to what you have now, like spots with like 247 in, I imagine with that many jobs, 127 positions, you were applying all across the country.
I mean, I went from top dog like stuff. I mean, like TNT assist, like production assistant. I went to like high school sports, like in shit, Montana. I mean, like I was go anywhere. Like I just want to go do something. And you know, I was like, I turned 22 and I'm like, what do you want for your birthday? I'm like, shit, I just want a job. Cause like, I can't be complacent. It just drives me nuts if I have nothing to do. Right. So I'm 2 weeks out of graduation, and I never even applied for this job. I got referred to by somebody, and I got the text on my birthday saying, hey, can you talk in 20 minutes? I'm like, hell yeah. We have a job opening we think you'd be good for with Iowa. And I'm like, yeah, okay. And then I got the job offer next day. And then they said, all right, move out there in 10 days, get to it. And I said, all right, let's do it.
Why do you think all the other places didn't give you a chance, or what's David's reason for his own demise with the other 127 spots?
You know, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think for me, I'm not very good. It sounds weird, considering I'm not good on paper. I always said, I'm like, if you get me in an interview, like, I feel very confident I could walk out with an offer, at least feel good about where I'm at. And I think it's difficult to sum kind of who I am up and what I'm kind of made of on a resume. And I think resumes at times can be so overbloated and just so saturated and so, I mean, flat, kind of bullshit, to be honest. Like, yeah, it shows you what your accolades are and where you worked, but it shows nothing about who you actually are. But that's the difficulty of having to go through the process of, you know, trying to hire people and find the right fit. Again, maybe it was an ego thing. Maybe it was like, I thought I was a lot better than I actually am, or, you know, whatever else like that. But I felt pretty good about what I had. And I've always said too, like, the stars kind of aligned, because like, if I didn't get a gig, if I didn't get a money, I'm like, I want to go to Iowa. I want to cover Iowa. And I think that'd be the best fit for me, considering I grew up following them. The stars aligned, everything worked out. So it's been crazy though. I think is a complete understatement.
I think you're talking to Drake's heartstrings a little bit there.
Like being a walk-on, pal.
Yeah. He's a walk-on reporter.
Yeah, it sounds like a walk-on story.
It's a fucking... It is.
Well, I mean, it is nuts, though, too, because, like, especially, it's like you mentioned earlier, like, if the newer reporters come in, they're starting to get some younger blood in here, and, like, I got a lot of respect for, like John Miller, Mark Morehouse, all those guys when they were here. Like, I miss Morehouse. Morehouse is one of the people that was super cool with me. Fantastic guy. I'm happy he's at least doing something with pro sports, even though he's gone now. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just better with him. Kind of the godfather of, like, coverage. But, yeah, man, I mean, like, if you want to talk about being a walk-on, like, everybody said, you know, walked in and has been here for 20 years, and it's a little bit intimidating when, like, I literally knew nobody in Iowa City. Like, I moved in, and it's like, get to it, and I'm like, all right, well, where's this facility I'm supposed to go? How do I apply for credentials? Like, I had never done any of that. Like, shit, first game story I ever wrote was when Kirk got when Kirk passed Hayden Fry and wins.
Wow.
And that was my first column. And I'm like, holy shit, like, this is probably one of the most important things I'm going to write.
And it's like, the first one.
Nuts. That's funny. It's the first one.
It's like going undefeated your freshman year.
Yeah, it's like those guys in 2015, huh? I
will say this though too, like, really quick. So, like, I told you, I followed Iowa. Like, so, like, that first year of trying to transition from, like, following, like, reporter, I'm not even gonna lie, like, that was so tough for me. It was hard because, I mean, like, I grew up, you know, I follow school and whatever else that. And I remember the first time I ever pissed off the Iowa staff, and I'm 90, I pissed off Kirk with it, but Kirk was always cool with me. It was after Iowa lost Northwestern, and they played Fant like 7 second half snaps.
I think that was I'm pretty sure that's our senior year.
I think it was your senior year.
No, we lost. And I wrote Nebraska a whole, or we lost at Northwestern that year.
That was when Fant had the fourth down miss, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was I was in.
So that was the year before you came in. Okay.
Yeah, that was 17.
Yeah. So the next one was when they played Fant, I think 7 or 8 second half snaps. And there was that whole thing, I think, that was going on with his brother tweeting about the coaching staff, and then something happened or whatever. But I was just like, all right, I'm going to write this column. Like, I'm going to talk to Noah. I'm going to ask Kirk a question. I'm just going to go. I'm not going to proofread or whatever. And that was like my first big, big column. But this is the line that pissed off a lot of people. And looking back, probably like, all right, I'm trying to be a hot shot young guy, trying to come in with these big, bold statements or whatever. I can't remember the exact line I said, but it was something like, the full-blown Kinnick magic has diminished into pixie dust until Kirk Ferentz and the offensive staff look in the magic mirror, acknowledge their mistakes, and realize they should play their key players more. And that's when I, like, my mic drop moment, and I tweeted, and I mean, people loved it, but like the reception from the coaching staff, and like, that's why I walked in. I'm like, I felt like every like coaching staff, I and like Steve Rowe and all those guys, I was just getting stared at every time I walked in the press room after that.
Yeah, I mean, that's like if you were to, you know, like, you're on the team and you know, in your interview say that you put the other team in body bags, you know. No one would ever do that. That's pretty ballsy. I'm curious, as a young guy who's trying to, you know, cut his teeth, the allure of every big story trying to be sexy like that versus just trying to put out good content, and how you manage or how you think about that dynamic of, I want to make a name for myself and grow my personal brand and become a guy that people really like to read, but I also don't want to just, you know, be that clickbait douchebag who does stuff for clicks.
Like, I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I probably read that headline and thought about making you swallow your teeth.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, that's the thing though, too. And I totally get it too. I mean, the thing is too, and like, that's where I talked about, like, even the growth over the past like 3 years for me is just realizing, you know, you got to pick. The thing is, if you try every story big, sexy, and all these bold claims, guess what? They're not big, sexy, bold claims anymore, because you do it every freaking story, you do it every freaking week. Like, yeah, pick your spots, pick your battles. I don't want to say pick a hill to die on, but like, just pick all smartly, be authentic. And at the end of the day, it's always cover it, be the eyes and ears for the fan, cover things from your perspective. But the second you take the coaching staff perspective and the player's perspective out of it, I think you've lost the trust of your audience. And I think it's important to be able to balance that. And I think I've really realized that, especially over COVID and even the year before that. Like, I think a lot of problems, I think there's a lot of really good things about sports journalism right now. I think there's a lot of really bad things happening in sports journalism right now. And I feel like in a lot of ways, there's a lot of a lost art of communication because of the, you know, whether it be social media, whether it be a disconnect between reporter and athletes. You got to be able to understand athletes, the coaches, and you got to be able to find a way to put yourself in their, you know, in their perspective while remaining true to your own. So that's kind of when I evaluate game tape and whatever like that, like, that's kind of the motto I've used to go forward on it.
It's interesting. It's interesting.
What's it feel like to know that players don't really like you because they're taught not to? So when you go into interactions with players, you know, you're tiptoeing around the fact that they're taught not to like you.
I wouldn't say they're taught not to like you.
We were kind of taught that the media was the enemy. That's all I'm trying to say.
I was just going to say, you're part of the dark side. You're part of the bad guys, right? I would say Iowa media maybe better than most. Like you said, when it was Miller and Morehouse, there's a few names that I'm not so high on, but you know, it's so tough to like be likable and also ask these stupid questions. And I feel like a lot, like 90% of the media is like, well, how'd you feel today? What did you feel good? What were you thinking on that play down the sideline? Like, how do you come up, you know, like, how do you be that guy who just like, isn't, again, I hate to say it, but like, isn't that kind of plug and play cookie cutter douchebag, like, that comes up and asks dumb questions?
No, and I think the thing is that where I'm kind of lucky, and to this extent, like, a lot of now that they've been in the program for a while, I covered a lot of these guys in recruiting. So like, I've known them even going back to their high school days. Like, I've talked with, whether it be their old coaches, families. So like, I feel like for me, I don't want an advantage, but there's an extra level of, I think, of trust there, especially if they believe I handled their recruitment the right way, or I handled covering their stories or whatever. But also, like, I'm not trying to back up the media here from this perspective, but like, with a lot of the general stuff we need to like actually scope out our story, there has to be the dumb questions in there, because, you know, it's the obvious question. It's this, it's that. I've asked a couple in my time, but at least the way I've always tried to pride myself on is, okay, I feel like, especially talking to a player, coach, this doesn't work as well. But like, if I'm talking to a player, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm closer age. I'm like, I know people who have been, you know, athletes, know people, or, you know, this or that. So I try to think back to my previous conversations with them. I've talked to ex-athletes. I'm like, hey, how should I go about this question? Or like, how should I interact with athletes or coaches? Like, what would you feel more like, when did you feel comfortable with, and all of that? So I've tried to do some steady work on it, and I try to get a little bit more into the X's and O's type thing, and just more so for perspective. But like, as far as, you know, how'd you feel running down the sidelines or this or that? Like, I mean, I want to make sure I say this right. The kind of non questions, but they have to be asked. They just do. But I think that
I agree with you, but I'm also not a reporter.
Can be able to separate that. And I get that. Like, that's the thing is, The other part too is like, even if you ask a basic question and they just an inkling of, I won't say an inkling of personality, but we all know there's cookie cutter answers in there. There's this or that. But if you can latch on to that and you can just that's how what like the runway that you can use to take off and do an actual part of the conversation that you're going to end up using.
Yeah. You got yourself in trouble, not in trouble, but in some drama on Twitter when you mentioned that.
Which time?
When you mentioned that you wanted to raise the standard.
Oh God.
Of the Iowa media. And I think that the boomers, they got a little upset with that one.
Oh yeah, no, they're ticked.
And sure. Then they came, and then one of them made a comment to another one of them that's like, we're going to raise the standard on our next podcast or something. And they kind of made fun of you. They took a jab.
Let me put it this way. It's I'm not going to mention names, but I mean, it's not uncommon for, you know, some of the guys to take jabs at.
No, and it makes sense because they've been in the game, and to some extent they're going to feel like they've got it figured out, and that's a shot at them. Like their standard isn't good enough for what they've been doing over the past 20 years. But what did you mean specifically when you said that?
So the funny part about that entire comment was they clearly didn't even listen to the part. They literally read my tweet and ran with it, which is kind of ironic for journalists, considering we're always preaching everybody, hey, read the context, like listen to the full segment, then judge for yourself. I prefaced it.
We know one guy in the Iowa media who definitely doesn't get the full story. He just likes to put shit out there.
And, but like the thing is with that too, is like, I'm like, guys work hard. They've been doing it for a while. There's a certain respect level there. And that's sort of true. Whether they don't like me or don't like me, like at the end of the day, like we're competitors. And you guys are competing. I mean, it's two totally different, you know, aspects of life and you know, games or fields or whatever you want to call it. But like I've said that when you come into an old guard, I mean, everybody here had been here for 20 years. They hadn't had it, you know, a young reporter come in with a new perspective. Like they've been telling, I don't want to say telling the same stories the same way or whatever else like that. But when you get so like complacent in that, I'll say, you know, a good old boys club, things can plateau. And I'm not saying they did. They can make that judgment for themselves. But I wanted to come in here, wanted to run shit, wanted to work. And I wanted to be like, all right, let's kind of inject some life into this media core. I'm not, again, not saying they were dead, but it's a new aspect. It's a new perspective that they hadn't had in a while. And that's all I meant by it. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, I mean, I got respect for those guys. I don't think there's a lot of respect for me in the way I've handled things. Like I'm nowhere saying I've handled everything perfect at all. Like I'm still young, dude. I turned 26 3 days ago. Like I'm still learning. I'm still growing. Like I'm still trying to figure out what the best way to do stuff is.
You're supposed to be perfect, dude.
I know. Apparently, the funniest part to me about that entire thing is like, how many times have you heard people, like older people, be like, "Thank God social media wasn't around in my day, because I would have gotten in so much shit back when I was 20, 25 years old." And then I make,
and then they shit on the person who's doing,
and then they shit on me for actually like,
dude, people are such egotistical.
It's crazy.
It's just what
it's crazy.
Yeah.
But again, I got respect for those guys. They work hard, but I'm going to keep doing my thing and I'm going to let people make decisions for themselves. I mean, keep in mind, which I don't know if they know this, I subscribe almost every outlet and I read almost everything. So,
That speaks to one of your, one of your goals on your LinkedIn, which could be,
oh God,
which could be pretty outdated, but it almost is word for word. The first one is to work harder than anyone in your industry. And exactly. I wonder what that looks like specifically for you. And how maybe, is it quality over quantity? Is it just putting in more hours, or what that means to you, working harder than anybody in your industry?
I think it's just never being complacent and never looking to do the same thing. Never look to plateau. It's always, hey, how can I engage with fans? How can we tell a different way? How can I, you know, amp up our podcast game? Can we get some sponsors? And can we just do all up? I mean, I got 1,000 ideas that rattled around in my brain. And I think now that we're getting to the point where, I mean, look, when I got here, 24/7 Sports was dead site in Iowa. It just was. It really wasn't around. And I like to think that Sean Bach and myself and like our national guys have put in a lot of work, but I'll say this. If you measure work harder than anybody else in, like, in whatever field by quantity, you're not going to get shit done. Nobody's going to remember the numbers. They're going to remember the quality. They're going to remember the highs, the low lights, or, you know, and everything in between. So I think for me, it's just like continuing to try to revolutionize, you know, new ways to be able to modern athletes. And I think at the end of the day, to accurately portray both sides, because I've always said this too, like, if you aren't passionate about storytelling, you're doing everybody a disservice by being in media. Because at the end of the day, these athletes, these families, they're trusting you to be able to tell their story, to be able to retell a game in a way that makes sense for everybody. And the way they can go back and read story and be like, hey, that was a great day. Or, you know what? Damn, that really taught me a lot. I think if you can't take that seriously, then get the hell out of the industry. It's a passion of mine. And because I know how hard I've seen how hard people have to work to achieve what they want to do. I mean, shit, even making a D1 roster, D2 roster, all the hours and the grinding in it. Take it seriously.
Yeah.
That's all it is, man.
How hard would you work for a blue check mark on Twitter?
Oh my God. I'm so pissed. I'm not there. Like, it's so stupid, but like, it's crazy that like, I see people like 90 followers verified and I'm like, I'm sitting there. All right, here's 10 bylines. Hey, I was on CBS National Radio, CBSSports.com. Here's my page. Sorry, you don't fit that description at the time. And then, you know, some meteorologist from like a population of 62 town in like Alaska verify. I'm like, all right, I can't win.
I think it's, that,
you know, maybe if I stop tweeting about Pop Smoke and starting smoke with people, then maybe I'll get verified.
It could
until
work.
Until then, like, keep rocking it.
It could work. Usually when people are worried about the blue check mark, it's kind of surface level and kind of like, who gives a shit to me? But in your industry, I think is the one that I would maybe be lenient on there, because a blue check mark signifies that, you know, that verified, this is a guy who, you know, is actually doing what he's like, he's got some validity behind what he's doing. Right. And,
yeah.
And you're a reporter and like, that's what you are. So I too have always wondered, like, what does it take to get that blue check mark? Cause like, I got,
are you looking for it, Cliff?
Well, I mean, I got 10,000 followers on Twitter.
What does that mean?
That's what I'm saying. And I'm like, well, I don't know what.
Still got to say something.
Dude, Twitter is very much real life, guys. Twitter is everything.
No, it is everything.
On that note,
I will say this though. I felt better.
Yeah, Cedric.
It was great to meet you, bro.
Hey, you too, man. I will say this. Sharif O'Neal got denied verification last night. Shaq's kid with like 330,000 followers.
Wow. That's interesting.
So I'm like, I feel better.
Not sure how that works. You and Sean.
Local weatherman, then.
Yeah. You and Sean put
out.
Yeah,
no, right? Maybe I should go to meteorology.
Yeah. You know, you should be reporting on circulonimbus clouds. You and Sean put out seemingly like fucking 10 articles a day, right? And
probably about that. Yeah, about 250 a month or so, I'd say.
Which is ridiculous. And some of them, I wonder if you sit there and you're like, am I trying too hard to get a piece out? Or this isn't just you. I'm saying in general for any reporter. I wonder if because it's go, 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 right, right, right. Every new story, get something out. You know, we want the clicks to come to our website, all this stuff. I wonder, like, is there ever a time where you write an article or a piece on something where you're like, hey, new piece up on the website, and you're literally just like, but I could have got everything I wanted to across in literally just a tweet. I think I saw somebody, and it could have even been you guys. I don't know. I think I saw somebody literally post like, new story out, this recruit making sets the date to make his decision. And it's like, okay, well, we've had like two articles on his recruiting process already in the last month. Mm-hmm. Now you write an entire article on him setting a date to make his commitment. Like, this is like, how deep are we getting here before we just need fucking quota, you know?
So my thing is, I either two things whenever I write a story. It's one, what new information is being presented, and two, if it's like something like a decision date or something like that, has it been long enough? Like, okay, I should give people a full recap. Because I'm like, if it's a decision date, but he drops a final three, and like he visited the schools like 2 months ago or whatever, and like we haven't really caught up with him about that school 5 weeks or so, we're gonna re-put that quote or follow up with him and put a quote in the story saying, hey, describe your final three. What's great about, you know, Iowa? What's great about, you know, Johnson or, you know, whoever else is on there? So like to recap that. And like the other part too is like the other day I put in a crystal ball for Chase Carter, who ended up going to Michigan State over Iowa today. And that's something I put that like, you know, that's about 200s. Okay. Here's my pick and here's why for like subscribers. And the other part too, is like when a kid says decision date, that's a free, like update. He's saying, okay, this is when it's going to happen. And maybe our updates have only been for like our VIP subscribers. Okay. Well, how can I get the free, you know, people who aren't subscribed, like a taste of what VIP people are getting. Mm-hmm. So let me put a free article out recapping sort of everything that's happened over the 2 months. And it's like, hey, you have known about all this a lot earlier had you been subscribed.
Yeah. It's kind of,
that's kind of the way I dictate about that. But like something about like, hey, like, I mean, I'll even throw, for example, I just barely finished an article about Caitlin Clark because she just arrived with USA basketball today. Okay, well, she's a two-time medalist. She's one of the, you know, the leaders of that team. Here's a recap of who's on the team with her. Here's a new schedule of like the first three games they're playing and where they're playing that have really been released up until that point. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking like a very basic thing, but like I always try to add like new elements to it because, I mean, look, clickbait journalism always exists, but like at least for me, it's like I hate that and I hate writing it because I feel like it just adds nothing to anyone at all. And I hope it inside each time I do that.
Yeah, every time a new episode comes out, I try to think of like what clickbait I could put in it because we're really I'm not above it at all. I mean, I will clickbait this podcast.
Well, if you want clickbait, what raising the standard? I mean, just use that in a quote and they'll price
it. I probably will.
Yeah, I figured.
It'll be one of the bullet points. It'll be how Eicholt plans to raise the standard.
Well,
Kevin, how did you feel
calm temperatures down before I go to Indianapolis tomorrow for Big Ten Media Days? Fantastic.
And how are you excited about that? How are you looking forward to that one?
Dude, I'm just excited about it. Like I'm excited to be able to see players in person. Like there's such a comfortability when you're in person with the, you know, athletes and coaches, as opposed to like trying to go over Zoom and they're sitting in like an empty room staring at like 20 people on a screen, like patiently to ask questions. Yeah. And like to go there without masks and like just to hear, you know, people talk about like there's going to be a football season. Remember this time last year, like football really was not going to happen. They didn't schedule out this point last year, like the first schedule. They didn't put that out till like August 8th.
Yeah.
So I think now that there's a sense of normalcy around, like I'm just excited to go and like regain kind of what was lost.
Yeah, that's it's got to be a fun, exciting part of the job when you get to travel and go do special stuff like that. It kind of breaks up the monotony of like, I don't know, you probably work from home, obviously, right? So you're sitting at your fucking kitchen table just writing about endless Iowa athletes or potential recruits. Like to some extent, at some point that probably gets a little bit like, ooh, I need to get up and move and, you know, get a little fresh scenery here and something like
see some people.
Yeah. Big 10 Media Days would be a perfect little.
When did they move to Indianapolis?
I think they're doing it year now. I think they switched. I think they're alternating years between Chicago and Indianapolis.
Just more kind of closer out east.
Yeah. Well, we get to go to Lucas Oil and that's where it's at. So like I'm in Lucas Oil. So, I mean, I'm stoked about that. That'd be pretty cool to like see the NFL type, you know, facilities and like get to go on the field and all that. So that'd be cool.
It was kind of cool for a little bit.
Yeah. For like,
yeah, sorry about, yep. I just remember that.
It was cool.
57 minutes and 38 seconds, something like that.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah.
Peaked.
Not to pinpoint that time.
I want to wrap this up, but I want to get your 2021 Iowa football sleeper pick.
Sleeper pick
for a player.
Yeah, I'll go both sides. And I think there's a lot of talk about Jack Campbell. There's obviously a lot of excitement about the secondary. I think I'm really excited about Justin Jacobs. Like, if they run a fourth, I mean, that kid on film coming out of high school, he's an All-American. He's tacked on about 35 pounds. I think he brings a new element of blitzing at linebacker that I really think Phil Parker could tap into. I think he's got a lot of explosiveness, a lot of athleticism, if he can stay healthy. And again, I think it's going to be tough to not play a 4-2-5 with that secondary. And Xavier Williams from UNI is a complete athlete. I think he's going to make a difference in a couple of games this year, what he can bring to the table. Offensively, I think Gavin Williams has a shot to be a really, really good, reliable number two back to Tyler. I think he's got a lot of power. I think he's improved his straight line. His straight line speed's always been good. I think he showed flashes of agility in the backfield throughout spring that he really didn't show at Dowling Catholic. He didn't show at South, I think he was at Southeast Polk before.
He was.
If I remember properly.
Then Dowling recruited.
That's,
or paid him. Shocker. I don't know. NIL opportunities. It could have been, something.
The other guy, Luke, I'm going to throw in third. I think Luke Lachey is going to be a future stud tight end.
We talked about Luke Lachey on our episode. Yep.
Yep. I think he's got all the tools to be a future All Big Ten receiver, tight end. If he can stay healthy, maybe All American. Who knows?
There you go.
Never out of the reach.
Bold hot takes.
Hot takes by David Eichold, just raising the standard fucking every minute at a time on this podcast. That's it. Episode 235. We do so many goddamn episodes, I forget. Hope you guys enjoyed this one with David. Little crossover episodes, washed up Swarmcast. We really enjoyed having you on, David.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me.
Talk to you soon.
Amen.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week. Peace.